What is going on? What is going on? What is going on, people? It is beautiful, beautiful to be back. It's been kind of busy trying to get on a normal kind of pace with the podcast to because I have a lot more, a lot more people to talk about. But just want to welcome you back and thank you for the people that have listened to it. The new listeners, I welcome you to Black Superheroes, where we bring to light our lesser known heroes in the African-American community. I believe that it is vitally, vitally important to the future, that our people are highlighted for the amazing things that they have accomplished in the past. What I've been highlighting on over the past few weeks are our Medal of Honor recipients. There are so much. I told you at the outset of, at the beginning of this podcast, that I was moved once I went into the African American Museum. And I saw this wall full of people I'd never heard of, even though I've been in the military for 21 years. And I thought that I felt strongly about the fact their story, I think, needs to be told in some way, shape, or form. So today I'm going to take it back a little bit to 1989, Atlanta, Georgia. A 10-year-old, only child. His mom and him are out on the town enjoying a couple of movies and some Zestos. I don't know, if you're not from Atlanta, you won't know what Zestos is, but it's a little restaurant that has patty melts and ice cream. That's all you need to know, because that was all that was important to me. And it's been around forever in Atlanta. It's a staple. It's kind of along the same lines as the Varsity and some other places in Atlanta that are, uniquely us. But, I mean, for all intents and purposes, it's just, cheap comfort food, and that's uniquely Atlanta. Anyway, while we're out, going to the movies, the movie that we went to see on this Saturday afternoon was a movie called Glory. Now, to set the stage for me, at this point, I had never seen a positive light shed on any black people with regards to the Civil War, ever. Especially living in Atlanta, where things can be, shall I say, a little bit complicated when it comes to the Civil War. So seeing this movie moved me in a way that my young mind couldn't really quite comprehend. Seeing that representation on the screen, experiencing the feeling and emotions from, the pride that the 54th displayed, and grasping and understanding, that the soldiers were fighting for a hope that wasn't currently present. A hope that with their sacrifice, the lives of those who would come after them would not know the struggle of slavery and prejudice. And throughout that movie, I kept asking myself, why would they fight if they continue to be treated like this? Why would they even fight? Why would they even join? And that question just exhibited the anger and, naivete that, not only of a 10-year-old like myself, but, someone who happens to be living the actual hope that they fought for. So, it wasn't until the end of the movie, that I really realized, why they were fighting. Now, if you haven't seen the movie, I'm sorry if I'm spoiling it for you, but the movie came out in 1989. It's 2019, so I think you'll be fine. But the person who I'm highlighting today had a very poignant moment in the climax of the movie when he would not allow the flag to hit the ground. This flag wasn't the same flag, at this point that enslaved his people. This wasn't, the flag that brought over all of his people from Africa. This wasn't that same flag. This was a different flag. This was a new iteration of the flag. This flag, instead of representing slavery and oppression, this flag, would represent freedom, not only for the people that were already here, but for African Americans. This flag, would represent equality. This flag would represent honor. And that man, who is the highlight of today's podcast, is Mr. William Harvey Kearny. Mr. William Harvey Kearny was born a slave in Norfolk, Virginia in 1840, a place that I just left. His father, William Sr., had escaped slavery through the Underground Railroad and eventually earned enough money to buy the freedom of his wife and his son. After freeing his family, the Carneys moved to New Bedford, Massachusetts. And William Carney Jr. had intended on becoming a pastor through ecclesiastical training, you know, with the intentions of, you know, wanting to be a, you know, pastor, a minister. But instead of following the call to preach, he decided to enlist in the Union Army in 1863. He would say that he thought that the best way that he could serve God was by serving in the military to help free the oppressed. And this is a new, you know, transition at this time in the war, because it's 1863 and it's just followed the Emancipation Proclamation, which allowed for the very first time African-Americans, you know, for black soldiers to serve in the Civil War. And he was recruited out of New Bedford. He decided, you know, to join the soon to be famous all-black 54th Massachusetts Infantry Regiment. And it was commanded by a 26-year-old Colonel Robert Gould Shaw. And he was a, you know, Robert Gould Shaw was actually the son of a wealthy Boston abolitionist. You know, 40 other black men served with him, including two of famed abolitionist Frederick Douglass's sons. All right, so this is amazing, right? The collection of strength within this regiment, the collection of those who were bent on fighting for a new hope, for a better future, all collected within this regiment. Carney soon rose to the rank of sergeant due to his education and his strong potential to lead others. And if you saw the movie, you saw Morgan Freeman's character, who actually played William Carney, You saw how strong, how much of a leader he was. And even the family would go on to say after the movie that his depiction was amazing, was moving, and, you know, really captured the sense of who they felt William Carney Jr. was. So during the battle, they were pinned down beneath the parapet. So the battle that is highlighted during the movie, and that's highlighted that he was awarded the Medal of Honor, was in the summer of 1863 when the 54th was sent down to James Island in South Carolina. This is where they saw their first major, you know, major combat, where they're, you know, they're being pinned down. Things were looking very grim. And this was all because, you know, Shaw volunteered the 54th, you know, to lead the charge on that heavily garrisoned fortified Fort Wagner. Because even though they had made it into the Army at that time, they made it into the ranks, they made it, the trust still wasn't there for, you know, for them in combat. So this is really the very first time that that significant combat had been achieved by the 54th. So during the battle, you know, they were pinned down beneath the parapet. Parapet is a low protective wall along the edge of a roof, bridge, or a balcony. That's a free fact. I actually want to be able to use that word in a real sentence at some point. But parapet. So other fort and was desperately trying to rally the men forward. As Shaw and the flag bearer were mortally wounded and began to fall, Carney seized the colors and prevented the flag from touching the ground. He struggled up the parapet, and though wounded in the legs, chest, and arm, he planted the colors at the top of the parapet. Now listen, this is profound. Now, though being shot several times in the leg, chest, and arm, he persevered. In that moment, what was driving him? In that moment, he had to know that no fault would be placed on him if the flag fell. You know, he wasn't thinking that, you know, man, this is going to really get me noticed right here. Nope. You know, he was willing to risk his own life for the hope, not the assurance, but the hope of freedom. You know, through reading these amazing stories, I'm always thrown because, yo, these actions run contrary to our inner wiring. They run contrary to our inner programming that keeps us safe, that keeps us from harm, that allows us to run away from those things that will kill us. But to stand up in the midst of heavy gunfire, to run and grab that flag, I mean, you're talking about, that is an intentional act of will. You know, to disavow the pain of already being shot 4 times himself, to disavow the pain of those wounds and to vow within himself that under no circumstance will I stand idle and be responsible for jeopardizing the hope of freedom for my people by watching the symbol of that hope hit the ground. So despite his wounds and the continuous heavy gunfire around him, Carney was able to keep the flag flying. Carney and the rest of the 54th remained pinned down, and only after reinforcements arrived was a beleaguered and decimated unit allowed to withdraw. You know, struggling back to the Union lines while still carrying the colors, Carney collapsed, saying, "Boys, the old flag never touched the ground. Boys, the old flag never touched the ground." You know, even when he made it back to, you know, to the barracks, he did not willingly give that flag up. You know, many witnesses said that Carney refused to give the flag to his rescuers, holding it on tighter until, with assistance, he made it back to the commanders, to the Union barracks. He would not let it go. He would not let that hope go. He would not let that hope hit the ground. After the battle, after severe wounds, severe blood loss, he survived that. He survived it. You know, he was discharged from the infantry due to his wounds. And for the act of his heroism at Fort Wagner, you know, Carney was awarded the highest military honor, the Congressional Medal of Honor. After his discharge, Carney returned to New Bedford and took a job maintaining the city streetlights, then delivered mail for 32 years. He was a founding vice president of the New Bedford Branch 18 of the National Association of Letter Carriers in 1890. He married Susanna, and they had a daughter, and he spent a few years in California until he returned back to Massachusetts. Carney received his Medal of Honor on May 23rd, 1900, nearly 37 years after the events at Fort Wagner. Now, more than half such awards from the Civil War were presented 20 or more years after the fact. And even up to that point, 20 African-American men had received the medal before him. But because his battle actions happened earlier than the others, he's generally considered the first to be awarded a Congressional Medal of Honor. And his citation reads, "When the colored soldier was down, was shot down, this soldier grasped the flag, led the way to the parapet, and planted the colors thereon. When the troops fell back, he brought off the flag under a fierce fire in which he was 4 times severely wounded." Amazing. Upon his death in 1908, the flag at the Massachusetts State House was flown half-mast in his remembrance, an honor usually only given to deceased governor, senator, congressman, or U.S. president. It was amazing to be able to tell, you know, that story, to know that, you know, Hollywood's depiction of that story was pretty good in the movie Glory, because that was, even to this day, one of my favorite movies. And I don't know if it subliminally convinced me to join the military or whatever, but you know, it had a vast impact, you know, in my life, and, you know, it definitely, you know, put me on the path to understanding what true service, true sacrifice really looks like. So I hope you enjoyed this story as much as I enjoy telling it. I will be back next week with another black superhero to talk about. And amazingly enough, don't tell nobody, but I actually got a couple of sponsors. So pretty hyped about that. But like I said, I look forward to getting your feedback. And I thank you for listening.